Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The open plains of the asphalt jungle. Home to many creatures, great and small, and the popping ground for one of the most clever and illustrious creatures, the plastic bag. Today we explore the cycle of life for this curious creature, the plastic bag, on its migration to its home, the Pacific Ocean. Once released into the wild, the plastic bag is unsure of itself. It falters at first. But soon, with some help from the wind, the bag will be airborne. This flight will be the first in its long journey towards its final destination, the garbage patch in the heart of the Pacific Ocean. Using the wind to guide it, the plastic bag moves across the city through the air.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a kolachki's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. He's seriously, strenuously, and severely green, and it gives him a headache every week. Here he is, Mike Novak.
In the main. Right.
Denny, you with me this morning here?
Oh, hey, wait. Hello.
Check
two.
Check, right. check. See? I was just going to say, this is the perfect way to open a show when I was going to say, hey, everything's working here, except the operator.
Yes.
This is what we call in the business operator error. You got to turn on your microphone if you want to be heard.
There you go.
Okay. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
I'm looking here, and people warned me. I'm kicking. We've got the virtual VU meters on the computer screen.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
It beats me. I came in one day and I saw them myself. I said, okay, meters. That'll work.
Meters. We haven't had those here. We haven't had those since the old studio because this control, you know, in a radio studio, traditionally you have the VU meters, the little red line that kicks back and forth. And when you talk too loud, it goes into the red and then it backs off. And then and today they've got them on the computer screen. They're animation kind of things. They're virtual VUs. They're not the physical VUs that we have at the old studio, but there they are. Now, see, I could just watch myself talk all day. Just sit here. Go, wow, look at that. They're moving.
And I was going to say, another thing, too, if you take your mouse and go across all of the screens, you'll notice that one mouse works for all of them.
I noticed that in the production studio today.
Yep. Moving on up.
Wait, no, not this one.
Oh, what? I think so.
Not the right screen. I've got the computer.
Try the other mouse that's over there.
All right, let me try the other mouse. Other side. Is that cut all the way across?
Does that work?
No.
Okay. Well,
not here. All right. So much. So you. What are you doing? Teasing me, man.
It's not, sorry about that, buddy.
Okay. No. In the production studio, it does. It went across all the screens. Not here. And on top of that, I noticed. And this happened last night. Remember last week I was having problems with the tweet deck.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't loading everything in, and I was trying to go back to the old version because the newer version, I don't like the new version. Well, the old version's working again, and I don't know why. But there it is.
I think Mike Novak and technology. That should be a show. A new program.
Oh, no.
Please. Mike Novak versus technology.
Versus technology.
Yeah, there you
I
go.
Like that. All right. We will do that. Welcome, everybody. Good morning. Happy Sunday. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Fantastic day.
Feels good. And it looks like a few of them in a row. Go figure.
I'll take it.
I will, too. although I have bad news from my community garden. Somebody stole our big pumpkin.
Really?
Yeah.
Already.
It wasn't even, and that's the point. It wasn't even orange. It was just this, and it was our first pumpkin, and it was getting beautiful. I mean, it was just so perfect. It was just the perfect pumpkin. Some idiot comes and steals it.
Wow.
And you have to go digging for it. I mean, you have to go looking through the pumpkin patch and pulling up leaves to see if you can find it. And then some idiot takes it. And Kathleen said they probably thought it was a watermelon because it looked like a watermelon. Mm-hmm. Moron, try to eat it. You are not going to enjoy that. That is your punishment, dude. Whoever took our pumpkin.
At least one of the pumpkins fully, you know, a pumpkin. You're a little flattered that someone took it because it's so nice looking. Because
it's,
you know,
pretty. It's pretty. And that's just so disappointing. I mean, we didn't have that last year. Last year was just kind of a miracle that anything got done. And we couldn't even give vegetables away most of the time. People were so respectful of what was going on in the community garden. Really, we couldn't. We couldn't. Here, take a squash. No. No, please, please. That's why we're growing it. Please take a squash. So tomatoes barely ripened at all last year, so we were giving away lots of green tomatoes. No. Yes, please take them off our hands. This year, pumpkin's gone. I think people are kind of helping themselves to tomatoes, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? So here we go. The garden gets successful. And
Lord.
Yeah. And by the way, first hour is kind of free form. Give me a call, 773-763-9278. I got a few things that I want to talk about. Stealing pumpkins is one of them. I'm wondering if any folks who have community gardens, and I'm sure we'll get some tweets on this now, too. And, of course, my handle is Mike Now, MikeNow, if you want to get in the Twitter conversation. Of course, you can always go to The Mike Novak Show on Facebook. And some people just go to Mike Novak. I've got, you know, and somebody invited me to Google Plus the other day.
Yeah.
An old friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, Randy, don't do that to me. Please don't do that to me because I'm not going to answer.
Mike Novak versus technology.
Mike Novak versus technology. What's the other one that people are doing now? What's this other Pinterest? What's that?
Yeah, I don't know. I hear people talk about it all the time. It's like, you know, I've invested enough time in the other ones.
Do you? Yes, that's what I want to say. Do you know how much energy I've invested in this already? Yeah. Have you any idea? And on top of it, I have to turn on the microphone and put on headsets. They're actually working today, too, which is amazing. Of course, I don't have any guests here now that they're working properly in the studio.
I'll go outside and see if we can round one up.
You want to bring somebody in and we'll
in.
Just talk to them? 773-763-9278. What I would ask, if you want to tweet or call or whatever, how you handled theft from your community garden. And I know it's not unusual for that kind of stuff to happen. It's just sort of, comes with the territory because we don't have a locked gate or anything. It's sort of wide open. Hi, here's our pumpkin patch. Please don't take the pumpkins until they're ripe, okay?
Yeah, you would think someone had other stuff to do rather than...
We need to put a scarecrow up, and I think maybe we'll put one in the image of a gangbanger. You know?
There you go.
And that'll keep people away.
I would be frightened.
Yes. Oh, it would keep the decent people away. Oh, darn. Okay, maybe we can't do that. Did you go to my website, mikenovak.net, Denny? I want you to do that.
Right now?
Right now.
Okay.
This very second.
Am I on it?
Do you have... No.
Oh.
Sorry. I can do that. I can arrange that.
Oh, no.
I have connections with the people who work on the website.
Okay.
Namely me and Kathleen. We are the people who work on the website.
You're hang gliding. You're zip lining.
I'm zip lining.
Oh, wow.
Have you ever zip lined?
Never zip lined.
Go to my website, folks. MikeNowak.net. MikeNowak.net.
Oh, this is on the TV show.
No. This was Friday. I went out to West Chicago to Ball Horticultural Company, and they have this customer day every year, and they've actually had it for several days with their people they work with and people who buy from them, Ball Seed. We've interviewed them for Dig In Chicago. They develop all kinds of different lines of seeds, and one of the ones that's come out this year is something called Boost Vegetables, where they have more nutrition. And don't worry, folks, not GMO stuff. Okay. It ain't GMO. It's your traditional hybridizing. And we still haven't had that conversation on the show, which I want to have at some point and get. But I can tell you here that is not GMO stuff. But they have found ways to put more nutrition into there's a line of vegetables, several tomatoes. Oh, gosh, I'm not going to remember all the different vegetables they have. But this is what they're doing. So anyway, I would go out to Ball Seed out in West Chicago, and they're having their customer day, and you walk the grounds and you look at all the new varieties of plants, and they're gorgeous. The grounds are beautiful. And just as you walk in, there's a zip line. And somebody asked me, I said, well, you go like over a forest when you're on this. And a zip line, if you need to know, is you attach a cable from point A to point B. Point A is high up, and then you get a harnessed in, and one of those what do they call those hooks carabiner? Is that it?
Okay,
I don't know. you're supposed to help me out here. They clip you up, and then they open this little door. I see. I'm standing on this platform. It's 35 feet in the air. And I'm harnessed in. I got the straps. And then they say, okay, step out. Except you're stepping out into air, 35 feet above the ground. And then you just go, bah! And the thing rolls you down the ground, which is like, I don't know, football field, couple of football fields away. And I really wasn't thinking clearly when I did it. I'm glad I did it. But there was nobody in line. And, you know, that was my first consideration, which was, hey, there's nobody in line. I'll do this.
Might as well zip line.
Might as well go on the zip line. So I handed my cell phone to the teenage girl behind me who's running the, you know, it's like a ride.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going over trees. We're going over, as you can see, asphalt.
Yeah, not a soft landing.
If something goes wrong. And so I handed her the phone. I said, you got to get a shot of this, okay? Here's how you work it.
Nice.
Please get a shot of this. And then the other one says, okay, step out. And I went, there's nothing there. What do you mean step out? And I didn't want to look like an idiot, so I just went. Ah!
Yeah, I can't see your face, but I can see. Ah! I can tell you're doing that.
Actually, you can see the thought balloon coming out of my head.
Yeah.
If you look very closely, in fact, we should put that on there. The thought balloon of
I'm assuming the view looks kind of nice, though. It's the trees.
You know what? You're not paying any attention to the view, pal. At that point, you're grabbing the strap so hard that you're cutting your hand in half, okay? Because you're just so scared to death. And you're just grabbing on and sliding down. And then when you get to the end, you go, oh, that wasn't so bad. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
It is. So I want to thank Ball Hort for giving me an experience that I've never had before. Never been on a zip line. I got a tweet here about the community gardens. Let's see, who did this one? This is Snappy J Dog tweets. We had neighborhood kids have a snowball fight using green tomatoes. A couple of years ago, green tomatoes were everywhere. It sounds like it was endorsed by the garden. I don't know if it was. Was that gorilla snowball fight there, Snappy J, or was that Was it spontaneous or did you guys plan this?
That could hurt.
Those little green tomatoes, you get one of the hard ones.
Yeah.
I was listening to Fred earlier when he got hit in the mouth with a rock.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you can do that with a green tomato too, I suppose. So if you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and you're right at the top of the page, see the picture of me on a zip line.
Nice shoes.
The dress shoes as well.
Yeah.
That was the other thing. I had dress shoes. I posted this on Facebook last night, got a lot of response to it. Now, and here I am. Yikes. Didn't see that. See, I was going to Facebook to look at all the fun stuff and the people who had responded to me on a zip line. Then Tom Shepard posts on Mike Novak on Facebook, picture of a bird with its beak caught in a plastic cap. That ain't right. And it writes, plastic causes major environmental problems for the world's animals. And the reason he put that up there is because in the second hour, I have Beth Terry on the show. I'm very excited about this, to have a conversation. Plastic Free, she wrote a book called Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. And I've decided the subtitle of this book has to be Everything You Know About Plastics Is Wrong.
Yeah.
I just was blown away. It's 300 pages, and she's got facts and links and ideas, and it's actually really positive. Her whole idea is to change the world. We talk about changing the world all the time on this show, and this is a woman that, and it just started in 2007 for her. You know, it's only 5 years since she had her epiphany, and she will tell you about it in the second hour. To now, when she releases this book, Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. And I hope you folks call in the second hour or tweet in or Facebook in, whatever, with your questions about plastics. Some pretty amazing stuff.
So we're going to learn quite a bit today.
You're going to learn. Believe me. And the only thing that about that is that there's not enough time to learn what I'd like to learn. There's so much. There's just absolutely so much. And that's why I urge people to pick up the book. It's from Skyhorse Publishing. And the links, of course, are on my page, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and it's all there. I got another tweet from Snappy J who said, no. She said, no, not an endorsed activity, the green tomato snowball fight. Yeah, but kids love green tomatoes, don't they? Yeah. Here's the other thing. It's a little bit of a rant going on here. I'm in the middle of a rant. Or I'll go into one. I want you saw the fun thing. The fun thing is me on the zip line. Now scroll down.
Okay.
On the homepage, MikeNovak.net. Look at the next photo in the middle there.
Okay. I see. Big piece of machinery here.
Yep. The Chicago Water Department came to our neighborhood, has been there for several weeks, working its way down the street, putting in new infrastructure, water infrastructure. Now, the thing is, I thought for a second, I don't know if it's sewers or new delivery systems for water or what exactly, because they don't tell you. They just show up on your block and they start digging, and they put signs up and said no parking for the next month on your block. And then they start digging, and I don't know exactly what they're doing, because I don't remember getting a notice in the mail. Perhaps I did. Maybe Kathleen's listening and can tell me that she got something from the alderman. I don't remember getting anything from the alderman.
Well, you know, 9 times out of 10, no one will probably, ask. They'll just, keep going with their day.
Exactly.
You know,
and that's what I was thinking. People don't ask.
Yeah.
I want to know what they're putting. And because I thought first it's just sewers, because I know this, they're always working on sewers and stuff. But I also know that the water delivery in the city needs upgrading, and that's cool. I'm as Mike would say, I'm down with that.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Sanders. Here's the problem. Oh, and I got the clue that it was about water delivery when I came home Friday and they were done working and turned on the water and it spat brown stuff at me for a while.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it did. It was like, and it's brown and it's
not chocolate water.
Let it go for a while and finally cleared up a little bit. I'm thinking, okay, do I have instructions? Am I supposed to run this for a while? What am I supposed to do differently now that they've hooked up new water? Is there a protocol to this? I don't know. I haven't been told anything. I just come home. All right, so you can see there's that big backhoe, which is, and that's sitting right in front of my house right now. Because they finished for the week on Friday, and they left it for the weekend, so you can see that. Scroll down to the next picture.
The damaged tree here.
Yeah. That's where I have an issue. I mean, go ahead. Fix the water pipes. Fix the infrastructure. Get it up to date. Let's get us into the 21st century. But while you're doing it, don't take out all the trees on the block with a backhoe because you're not paying attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you kidding me? Where's the Department of Forestry in the city of Chicago? Look at those pictures. Look at that. Look at that first one. Just stripped the bark. That tree's a goner. That's just insane. And the one next to it, I mean, there's several trees. And look at the branches on the parkway.
Mm-hmm.
They just, knocked off that big branch. Sorry.
So just in the process, they're just hitting.
And look at the gouge. Huh? The final one, the one at the bottom.
Yeah.
That's the tree in front of my house. Now, that tree might survive. And if while they're putting in water pipes throughout the city of Chicago, they do this, we're not going to have any trees left. They're going to take out half of our trees.
Yeah, fixing one problem, creating another.
Yeah. I'm wondering if anybody else has had this difficulty in the city of Chicago or elsewhere. But it seems a little ham-fisted. It seems a little, they might be putting in the pipes well, but they're destroying trees in the process.
Like a big time here.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I urge people to go to my website, MikeNovak.net, take a look at those photos. Because they're unbelievable. I went out yesterday just to take a look at that and see what it was that they had done. Because I don't want to go out there while they're working taking photographs so they can say, "Hey, what are you doing? Well, we're gonna I'll tell you what we're gonna do with you. We're gonna take the backhoe to your house." and they might. You never know. So that's just. So I guess I have to go now to the city of Chicago and say, hey, are you going to bring the forestry department out here to clean up, first of all, fix the jagged wounds where you just ripped branches off of the tree? Are you going to do that? Or are you just going to leave them there open to disease and insects? And are you going to talk to these guys and say, you really can't just go bumping that backhoe up against trees and ripping off the bark, up to 15 or 20 feet. That's really not kind of good for the tree. So that was one of the things I endured this week. Okay, it's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I have one more thing two more things. I want to talk about before we Rick DeMille weather, of course, at 9:45 this morning. Beth Terry, Plastic Free, How I Kick the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too in the second hour. And then at the end of the show, Dr. Laura Chamberlain is going to preview Stop the Frack Attack on Illinois rally, which is tomorrow at Daly Plaza from 11:30 to 1:30. So, you know, we have not started fracking in Illinois, but they're all lined up. They've got their tools. They're ready to go. They're ready to blast chemicals into the earth in southern Illinois. And there's still an opportunity to not just stop it, but create guidelines for doing it. We have no guidelines. It almost, we talked about it on the show several weeks ago when I had the environmental panel here, how this was one bill that came up and almost got passed at the end of the session, and then they ran out of time because things get pretty chaotic at the end of the General Assembly session in May. Well, what it would have done is imposed a moratorium for 2 years in Illinois until we figure out what kind of regulations should we have for fracking in Illinois. And we learn stuff, new stuff, every single day. And I agree. It's like, yeah, you know what? Let's get those rules in place before we do this. But that's, you know, the American way is drill first, ask questions later. Mm-hmm. You know what? Maybe in Illinois, we can flip that around. Ask the questions first and then decide how to drill.
Dr. Laura, very passionate. So, you know,
yeah,
she's
first time on my show. She's been on with Marshall Stern.
Yeah, she was on yesterday.
Was she on yesterday? Was mm-hmm. she talking about the same thing?
Yep.
Ah, okay. That would be good to know when I'm booking programs too. Okay, I have a little chat with Marsha about that. All right. Well, we'll give her a quick hit here on the show.
No, she called in. Like I said, very passionate. So she wants to get the word out. You know?
Yeah, she is. She is very passionate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and then that's the Stop the Frack Attack rally, the Stop the Frack Attack on Illinois rally. Actually, it's the Stop the Frack Attack on IL rally, which is stands for Illinois. Okay. 773-763-9278. If, anybody wants to jump in, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Even though we've had some rain in some areas lately, a lot of trees have stressed over the past few years by various conditions, including drought and flooding. This year it's drought, which means that you need to continue to pay attention to soil moisture for the second half of the summer. When you water, use a drip hose for young trees and a sprinkler on low at the drip line for mature trees, and water deeply and infrequently. Now, folks, don't get faked out. We had some rain. You might have had some rain in your area. Don't just assume everything's cool because you had a little bit of rain. It hasn't been, you know, Rick DeMaio will tell us in a few minutes about where we stand with water in Illinois. We're still down. We still have a deficit. In addition, mulching and other soil care activities can help create the optimal growing condition for your trees. Mulching is a way to help trees in general, but especially in drought conditions. Use organic materials such as wood chips or composted leaves. Mulch helps conserve moisture in the soil and increases the amount of organic material and activity. By the way, a great deal of tree root growth occurs in the fall. Practices that promote root development then will go a long way to protecting the long-term health of your trees. Yeah, you know what happens? The trees drop their leaves. Well, they're still growing. It's just that the energy is now going to the roots. So if you can promote that growth in the fall, that's going to help your trees come next spring. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Okay, looking for, see, the minute you say that everything's cool and you don't have any issues with the computer, it bites you in the butt. Now, I had that commercial here, and it's showing up on the screen. It says, not found. Now, come on. I loaded that in there earlier. I know it's here. I do know it's here. Now, let's try this real quick and just see what happens. Maybe it is found. Survey says. All right. Let's try it now. Nope. It says it's not found. Wow. Hokey poke. All right. 773-763-9278. If you have a question or comment on the Mike Novak Show, Rick DeMille weather coming up in just a second. I got a tweet from Scott Jameson. Tour de Trees in Portland 1 week from today. Will be keeping his blog updated as he rides, provided he survives. I know. It's a lot. Wow. And another tweet. Please, this morning I listened to Fox News blast the entire NASA program for pointing out the unprecedented Greenland ice melt. Are you kidding me? Fox went after NASA because they happened to take pictures from space, from satellites of Greenland, and there was an unprecedented ice melt. I don't know if you saw that in the news. I don't have that information in front. I can get it. Wow. That's weird. I don't understand why they would do that. They would get mad at, oh, I know, it's shoot the messenger. That's what that is. Don't shoot me. I'm only the messenger.
And if, yeah, no, you know how to zip line too, so.
That's right, and I can take out those Fox people, okay? So, yeah, I reloaded that that commercial, and it's pretending like it doesn't exist.
Yeah, it said not found when I went in the production room.
Well, it was there last week. Yeah, I haven't changed anything from last week.
Hmm.
Why isn't it there? The minute you say everything's cool, it rises up to bite you in the butt.
I'm going to start saying everything's awful when we start the show. And maybe it'll change.
Okay. The other thing I was going to mention, a couple more things that I was going to mention, one of which is last week we got into that little debate about cats. And, you know, I got the cat family in my yard. And they're still there. And we're trying to figure out what to do with them. Although they haven't left any rats for me lately. Maybe they got insulted when I didn't appreciate the dead rat on the back porch. So, but we got to, Joel Greenberg and I, who was here last week, Joel and I got to talking about, bird mortality and how cats are part of bird mortality. And Tom, one of my listeners, wrote to me and said, no, your figures are off on that. I said, okay. I figured, I'll tell you what I'll do is I will go online and see if there's something I can find about the bird mortality, and I did. And I see we got Chester online. I'll get to it in a second, Denny. Chester, hang on just a sec. So I find this study that was done in 2005. USDA was involved in it. It's called A Summary and Comparison of Bird Mortality from Anthropogenic Causes with an Emphasis on Collisions. Quite a mouthful for a title. And footnoted and everything. Lots of statistics. And I put some on the website. If you go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show. All right, here's what the study showed in terms of bird mortality in the United States. Collisions with buildings. How many bird deaths do you think? And collisions with buildings is by far number one. That's an easy one to figure out. Here's the number. Drum roll. 550 million or 58.2% of bird deaths are caused by collisions with buildings. Okay, fine. We were talking about cats. Cats is not number two. Is not number two. Number two is power lines. 130 million or 13.7%. Cats is number three at 100 million bird deaths per year, 10.6%. Now, I said it, I thought it was, I had read someplace that it was around 500 million. So I was only off by 400 million. although they do say in the study, to be fair to me, they do say in the study that it's an underestimate in all likelihood. So after cats, number four, automobiles. About 80 million birds are killed by automobiles each year, but that's only 8.5%. Next on the list, pesticides. 67 million birds are killed by pesticides, at least as of 2005. This is their study showed. 7.1%. After that, communications towers, 4.5 million birds. But that's 0.5%. That's 0.5%. Communications towers. Now, this is the next one, because I get these things from the American Bird Conservancy. I get these emails, and they always railing about how wind turbines are killing birds, and we can't have that happen, and we've got to take down the wind turbines, etc. Wind turbines account for 28,000 and a half deaths of birds. That is 0.01%. 0.01% of bird deaths are caused by wind turbines. Airplanes, also very low, 25,000. I figured it would be more, but it's also 0.01%. And then there are other sources, oil spills, oil seeps, fishing by catch, etc. They're not calculated because they're too small. I'm kind of surprised that oil spills isn't up there higher, but there you have it. So if you want to read that whole study, it's on my website, mikenovak.net. Scroll down to the bottom, and we even have a chart about that, and you can see the chart is there. All right, let's go to the phones and say good morning to Chester in Chicago. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Yes, good morning, Mike. I'd like to make a suggestion on the use of plastic bags.
Okay.
I do a lot of work in a community garden north of Howard Street in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people bring in a bag of mulch or a bag of something to add to the soil. And we also have various community groups on occasion, student groups, et cetera, that come through and with good-hearted efforts do a cleanup or spread mulch or do something in the community garden. Always, when someone comes by, there's a fresh virgin roll of contractor grade plastic bags that comes along with them. So what I've decided to do, or what I've started to do, is the bags of mulch that we have, or any plastic bags that the large bags that we use in the garden, I've made a procedure where we cut the top of the bag across very neatly, you know, rather than just diving into opening up the bag.
Mm-hmm.
I cut the bag neatly across, empty the bag, shake the bag out, and then hang the bags over by our compost bin, by our area that we share. And this way, whenever there is a need for a plastic bag for cleanup purposes or whatever, we reuse the old plastic bags. And I'd like to encourage community gardens and home gardeners to do the same, to never buy contractor grade or any type of virgin plastic garbage bags, and instead look at the plastic bags from compost or from fertilizer or anything like that that can be reused. You know, they can easily be piled up in a garage someplace and used when necessary.
It's a great idea to reuse plastic bags. Anytime you can reuse plastic in any way is great. When we get to Beth Terry, who's going to be on after 10 o'clock, she's trying to take it one step further. Don't use it in the first place. She's just about cut it, plastic out of her life, but it's impossible to do it completely, given where we are with plastic in our society and how it's in absolutely everything. I'm with you there, Chester. Anytime you can reuse a bag and use it as many times as possible, that's what we try to do in our place.
Right.
You're going a long way towards helping. And if everybody did that, we'd be in a lot better shape. And then that's just the step. That's one step toward not having them all together. But, I mean, that's my question for Beth is, does she really think that we're at a point where we'll ever get rid of plastics?
There's a couple of other points. One, if one does want to purchase plastic bags, there are recyclable or plastic bags made with recyclable material. Whole Foods has them, and I'm sure other places have them also.
Right. But there are people who would argue, and Beth Terry's one of them. She says you don't recycle plastic, you downcycle it.
Exactly.
Because every time you use it, the product gets grosser and grosser, and it gets to a point where it can only end up in a landfill.
Right.
Which is, you know, an argument when people say, well, plastic or paper is just as dirty when you manufacture it. That may be true, but eventually paper can biodegrade completely, where plastic can't.
Also, this notion of having to put garbage in a plastic bag to carry it outside into the garbage can is, I'm not sure where that came from. Maybe the Petroleum Institute people, but in Chicago and probably other suburbs, but definitely in Chicago, there's no requirement to put garbage in a plastic bag as long as it's in the can. So I encourage people to not even use plastic, just get it in the black garbage cans, the stuff that's not recyclable, and forget the plastic bag in the first place.
There's no requirement. You're saying there's no law that says you have to have it in. But though, as well as I do, on a hot day, garbage in a black plastic container, what that's like.
Also in the black plastic garbage bag, same difference.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. All right. That's a great idea, Chester. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. Have a good day. Let's go to line two. Keith and Elgin, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, Mike. Good to speak to you.
That was loud. Okay, sorry. My head nearly came off. Yikes. Okay, how are you, Keith?
I'm very well.
What you need?
Well, I heard you talking about plastic bags and how terrible they are, and I have to agree with you. When I left the British Army, I joined an Arab Army, and in serving with them, we used to patrol up the Yemeni border, and because that happened to be the country we were fighting at the time. And way out in the middle of nowhere, way up into what they call the empty quarter, along the South Saudi border and the Yemeni border, there would be plastic bags floating across the desert.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was nothing there. To make sure people didn't know we'd been there, we used to take everything out that we took in. We would get dropped off by a helicopter or plane, and I mean everything. That's your bodily wastes as well.
Wow.
We didn't leave anything out there to show people where we had been.
Of course.
Mainly for
right.
security, and plus that was the way we were. But I hear that there is a huge island of waste in the North Pacific somewhere?
Not only the North Pacific, but the South Pacific, the North Atlantic, the South Atlantic, and the Indian Ocean. There are five gyres, or is it gyre? I'm not sure. I meant to look up how you pronounce that, but they're swirling garbage patches, five of them, huge, in our oceans. And Beth's going to talk about that. I got to let you go. That's a great story, Keith. It makes sense. Not only do we have them in the oceans, we got them in the deserts, too. Thanks a lot for calling.
Do.
All right.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. Rick DeMille next to tell us if we're going to enjoy some cool weather for a while.
Hot, dry summers are hard on our lawns and landscapes. Use Milorganite fertilizer to help your lawn and landscape survive the stressful summer season. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. The organic nitrogen in Milorganite is slow release and non-burning, even during drought. The fertilizer will be in place and ready to work when better growing conditions and moisture return, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% iron promotes deep green growth. Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
This is Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Well, I've heard lots of people say they're gonna settle down. Let's get to our meteorologist, Rick DeMille, who is back from wherever he was last week. Rick, how you doing? Rick? he stepped away for a second.
Say, I hear him. I hear something.
I can hear the show. Rick? Wow. Are you there, Rick?
Yeah, I'm here, Mike. Morning. How are you?
Okay. We lost you there for a second.
Yeah, just a second. I was in the middle. You know, when you're in the middle of, like, making coffee and... You've been gone for a week, and you come back, and you open up the thing of cream, and you go, you know what? That doesn't smell too good.
Yeah, well, it's been sitting in 100 degrees. Well, I hope you didn't leave it out on the counter, actually.
No. It was just one of those things where I'm like, you know what? I think I need to go to the other cream source. But, yeah, California was nice. But the weird thing about it is that you go out there this time of the year, and the grass is brown, but it's brown everywhere because that's what it's supposed to be like out there in California. And you come back here and you go, wait a minute, the grass actually turned a lighter shade of green.
Yeah, we had some moisture. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've gotten some decent rain over the last couple of week to 10 days, a couple of bursts of, you know, an inch to an inch and a half. In fact, much of northern Illinois all of a sudden is like, looks like it's back to normal from a standpoint of topsoil moisture, but as we all know, that down below 3 inches or so to the south of us, it's been relatively rain-free down there. And obviously, you've heard about it in reports even on now. It's become mainstream, you know, national news. And much of the crops, the corn crops in central southern Illinois and almost all of central and southern Indiana are basically done. I mean, they're gone for the year. And farmers are actually, I think, when, you know, you had Patrick Sketch on last week talking about how some of these farmers have actually converted their fields over to soybean or just basically tilled under what they have and, you know, just now going, hopefully trying to get something out of it. But this is going down as probably the worst drought around here since 1988. And the good news is that we've had a little bit of a change in the pattern, which may cool us off somewhat. But the agricultural industry definitely reeling from this, Mike, without a doubt.
Absolutely. And even though we've had some relief here, it's still, I was talking about in terms of tree care and keeping your trees hydrated, as you said, parts south, just total disaster here. We've gotten some showers over the past week, but we still have a deficit, don't we?
Oh, God, yeah, the deficit, almost 4 to 5 inches in some areas. And, you know, the thing about deficits is you have to kind of know, like, when do you begin to start counting a deficit? At what point, you know, when you look back at when that deficit really began, do you look back at early May? Do you look back at maybe the beginning of June, the beginning of July? Really, when you think about the growing season around here, the deficit really began right around that second week of May. And that was the last time we had the real heavy rain. And then even when we did have it, the problem, I think, more than anything, what we had this summer, Mike, is so much sunshine. And what you really need more than anything is that cloud cover, that cooler temperatures after the sun or after the rain does fall, so that moisture can actually leach into the soil and, you know, help things out beyond that. The good news, though, the pattern has definitely begun to show some signs of change. Even though we hit 99 degrees on Wednesday, that makes it the 35th day, I believe. Yeah, 35th day so far of temperatures above 90 so far for this year. Actually, number 34, correct myself on that. Back in 1988, we didn't hit number 34 until August the 2nd. So we're still running a little bit ahead of schedule, but the pattern doesn't look like we're going to get into that upper 90-degree weather yet. And even though we've only had 4 days above 100, we've actually had 2 days where we've hit 99. So essentially you can say we've had 6 days above 100, and the record still is obviously number 7 or 7 days above 100 set back in 88. So we are still on pace to break the all-time record set back in 1988. But at the same time, what's amazing to me is how Lake Michigan water still continues to warm up. We've actually had the Sudden Lake Buoy. I've never, ever seen this before. 85 degrees. That was the water temperature.
Are you kidding me?
Sudden Lake, yeah, the Sudden Lake Michigan Buoy temperature hit 85 degrees. The warmest was ever was 84.5, set back on August 18th, 1988. And on July 26th, that was just a couple of days ago, at 1 in the morning, hit 85 degrees. I have never, ever seen that before.
Wait, that means that we could get a hurricane to form over Lake Michigan.
Well, it was interesting because the other day, what was it, not last night, but the night before, we actually had a couple of lake effect rain showers come down the lake because the temperature at about 4 or 5,000 feet above the ground was only in the 50s. And I don't think I've ever seen a lake effect rain shower in late July. And I'm looking at the radar, I'm like, this is actually lake effect rain. And to get that in July is just something that you've never seen before. So, again, we keep seeing these, like, really strange events that are weather events, but they become climactic events because we've never had that before. Now, granted, that was, you know, for a brief period of time, and much of the lake is probably mixed up a little bit, and is probably back down into the upper 70s, lower 80s. But yeah, you're right. When the water temperature gets above 82, generally speaking, you can have some sort of a tropical weather system develop. So it'll be interesting to see how this then affects whether or not. And this is, I think, some good news out of it, whether or not some of the farmers that did lose a lot of their grapes and cherries and strawberries, or at least the cherry trees in southwest lower Michigan, can do something maybe to plant where they know that the growing season can then, you know, extend maybe another 3 or 4 weeks into the month of October. I don't know. I mean, obviously that's something that they would have to deal with because then you have to worry about a frost or a freeze. But we keep getting these strange occurrences happening where your boundaries are now shifted, you know, either earlier or later or longer or sooner. And it's just it's something that continues to bend the mind as far as what happens when we keep seeing these weird climactic events occur. You're basically seeing a science experiment take place right in front of your eyes.
Yeah, and if you live in St. Louis, you're really in a science experiment. They have had so many 100-degree temperatures this year. We're actually kind of spared from that, and you don't have to go that far south.
No, and that's a good point, because if you go down into Bloomington and Springfield, I think Bloomington and Springfield, they're up to about 10 days above 100. I know St. Louis is up to about 12 or 13 or 14. And the thing about it is they're just completely decimated down there, because now you have areas not only in the urban area of St. Louis where I think the number of deaths due to the heat is up to about 20 to 30, which is relatively low considering how hot it's been, but clearly because we've begun to do a better job of letting people know about how hot it is and how long it's going to be hot, and getting out and getting to the elderly and the sick, and getting air conditioning units into their buildings. And I don't know about you, but I went out and bought an air conditioner about a month ago, and I picked that thing up, and it probably weighed about one-third of what an air conditioner weighed about 20 years ago, which is really good, because one of the reasons why a lot of people may not get an air conditioner is because it's too heavy, I can't put it in. But nowadays, you can get an AC unit that goes in the window that weighs probably about maybe 15 to 20 pounds. So we've done all these things to help people obviously get through the heat. But, yeah, you're talking about St. Louis. I think they're up to number 12 or 13 for the number of days above 100. They're still way above the record total up to this point back in 1934. But still in 1934, 35, and 36, the real heat actually started to occur about now and then continued into the first couple of weeks of August. And still, when you think about it, here we are talking about all this heat, and it's still only the 29th of July.
Yeah.
We still have another month to go about this. So,
so where do you see this? You said it, the pattern seems to be breaking a little bit. Are we likely to get back into that 100-degree pattern?
No, I don't see anything in the way of 100 degrees. I do see something in the way of mid-90s, probably getting back in here maybe by the end of next week. But overall, the forecast in short, beautiful day today, high temperature right around 85. Near 88 tomorrow, a lot of sunshine, maybe 90 by Tuesday. And then we kind of flirt, Mike, with upper 80s to near 90 degrees for the next 6 to 7 days with a day-to-day chance of a couple of showers and thunderstorms beginning on Thursday. So nothing in the way of extreme heat, nothing in the way of what I've seen around here, which is extreme thunderstorms with these strong winds and heavy rainfall. So this week, I think, is kind of like one of those weeks where it's kind of just kind of quiet. It's like when you have a party and the raucous crowd leaves, and now you can just say, hey, wow, it's gotten quiet around here. Let's enjoy the next 5 or 6 days, and that's pretty much what we'll get.
And any chance of mitigating the water deficit at this point?
No, I think if anything, rainfall over the next week looks to be about 3/4 to about maybe 1.5 inches. If we really want to mitigate the deficit, we need about 1.5 inches of rain per week between now and the middle of September, and I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yikes.
So a drought takes a long time to get into it and a long time to get out of it, and that's pretty much what we're in right now.
Wise words from Rick DeMaio, and go have your coffee since you were already putting it together. And we,
I think I ruined the first one when you start to see that coffee begin to curdle a little bit. I'm like, well, after the show, I got to take a walk down the street.
I believe you do now. Okay, well, go get that cream. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Mike.
All right, bye-bye. That's Rick DeMaio. Go to DeMaioWeather.com or go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and click on to get to his website and all kinds of great information. Second hour, Beth Terry, trying to get rid of plastics in her life. I've got a lot of tweets in it, and we'll talk about it. I'm eager for you to call about that.
As at home in water as it is on land, or in the air, the bag's natural buoyancy makes it an excellent swimmer. It's close now, and it can feel it. At last, the bag has reached the gateway to the open sea. Careful to avoid the mouths of hungry sea life that feed on the helpless plastic, the bag will travel hundreds of miles to join the thriving community of plastic known as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. The Garbage Patch is a veritable plastic oasis where millions of tons of plastic garbage remain trapped by the currents. It is said to be twice the size of Texas. Never actually biodegrading, here the plastic bag can live indefinitely, peacefully coexisting with billions of other petroleum species before breaking into ever tinier plastic pieces, thus completing the plastic cycle of life.
Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
What's best? I want a girl with shoes that cut and eyes that burn like cigarettes. I want a girl with the right allocations who is fast and thorough and sharp as a tack.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. And we have a girl just like that with a
with a short skirt and a long jacket.
And that person is Beth Terry, who's on the phone right now. How are you, Beth?
Hi. I love that song. You should hear my husband do it for karaoke. It's pretty awesome.
Ah, that's great. See? Yeah, and I'll bet you've never been introduced like that before, have you?
I never have. That was the best way, especially at 8 o'clock for me on a Sunday morning.
Absolutely. 8 a.m. in California, sunny Oakland, or is it cloudy Oakland today?
Well, so the sky looks kind of gray, but it's only 8 o'clock. It'll burn off, and it'll probably be beautiful later.
Okay, wonderful. This is Beth Terry, who wrote a book called Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. It's from Skyhorse Publishing. And, of course, all the links are at my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and I've got all that information. And it's such a pleasure to have you on the show, especially because the book is amazing. The book is just absolutely amazing. And you got to, I don't know if you've gone to my website yet, but I tell people, buy the damn book, you know, run out right now, get the damn book today, because I've come up with a subtitle for you, by the way.
Oh, what's that?
The subtitle of the book should be, it's Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. Subtitle, Everything You Know About Plastics Is Wrong.
Yeah, I had a lot to learn when I first started doing this 5 years ago. This is the book I wish had existed when I was first starting out 5 years ago. That's how I wanted to write it.
Well, you know what? That's the amazing part, Beth, is that this book didn't exist until you wrote it.
Right.
And I can't believe it didn't, because for one thing, you folks who need to know that I was amazed by how thorough the book is, and I think that's just fabulous. You have suggestions, you have links, you have facts. You take the whole issue and you dismantle it and put it back together again, and then in the midst of that, you remain positive about changing, because I don't see how we change our way of lives. You know, I was thinking as I was reading the book, of the people who are in stores and get plastic bags. And you talked about your first experience, or one of your first experiences walking in with your reusable bag and being almost apologetic for it. I've been doing that for several years, and I'm arrogant. I'm antagonistic. Here, put it in it. No, get rid of that plastic. Put it in the reusable. No, I don't want another special one for meat. No, get that out of there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a lover, not a hater, or a fighter, whatever that line is.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Not a hater.
Very good, very good.
I had to learn to speak up. I had to learn to get outside my comfort zone. And, you know, a few years later, there was a reporter that was following me around. Actually, it was Susan Frankel who wrote the book, Plastic, A Toxic Love Story, and she was following me around to see how I lived. And she asked me at one point, don't you ever get embarrassed? And I think this was when I was in a butcher shop with my stainless steel pot getting meat for our cats. And I looked at her and I said, oh, no, once I turned 40, I stopped being embarrassed about anything. But, you know, that wasn't actually true. And I have had to learn to get outside my comfort zone and speak up and not just accept the status quo, but it's important to me, so I do it.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. I'm getting tweets already here on the show about plastics and the whether you should be putting your, you know, how did we get started putting our garbage in plastic bags?
Yeah.
And I imagine there are people right now who'd say, oh, that's we have to, otherwise there would be chaos. It would be it'd be unsanitary. And I'm thinking, wait, it's just garbage and it's in a plastic bag. How sanitary is that?
Yeah.
You look at my neighborhood, it's all spilling out in the alley anyway. So
we don't use any plastic bags for our garbage. But there are strategies. I mean, there are reasons for that. First of all, the recycling doesn't need to go in a bag. So the recycling just goes into the bin as is.
Well, that's, you know, that's in Chicago, and you're probably aware, maybe you're not aware that we had a thing called Blue Bag here, Blue Bag Recycling.
Mm-mm.
All right.
When
Richie Daley was in office, Richie Daley the younger, he instituted this program called Blue Bag. And this was in the early 90s. And the idea was, and it was single stream, mm-hmm. except you put them all in a blue bag. Here's the problem.
Was it a reusable bag or a disposable?
No. Disposable bag.
Oh,
you silly girl. and then they would come and you would put the recycled blue bag, the blue bag with your recyclables in it, in your garbage with the other garbage plastic bags.
Oh, so people didn't have to go. Oh, wow.
And then they dumped everything into the big truck, smooshed it down, took it to a transfer station, and then tried to separate the recyclables.
Did they have problems with the bags clogging up the sorting machine?
Well, that was before, way before that. This was where they were doing this all by hand.
Oh, I see.
And the problem they had was that all the recyclables were contaminated because they had been smooshed in with the garbage.
Right.
And it didn't work.
Right.
And everybody knew it didn't work except the city of Chicago, which held on to that thought and that program for 15 years until finally they went to single stream in the big blue bins, the blue carts that we have now. Now, but that gets to the thing where you talk about people putting recyclables in plastic bags. Well, now what people do is they put their recyclables in blue bags often. In and then put them in the blue carts, and I call it the revenge of the blue bag because, as you and I both know, and you write so eloquently in your book, you do not put film plastic, don't put plastic bags in with recyclables because it just gums up the recycle machinery.
And I actually have a friend that I met through my blog named Cliff who lives in the Chicago area, and he goes through the neighborhood pulling plastic bags out of people's recycle bins because he knows. It's a problem. They just jam the sorting machines. Yeah.
Right. And I hardly know where to start here. There's just so much, Beth, and we're going to run out of time so fast.
How much time do we have?
We got about another half hour. Okay.
But I
also know how chock full of stuff the book is. Let's start with your epiphany, and I'm getting tweets here on stuff. You know, one of the I just got tweeted. Why don't we have a deposit on plastic bottles in Illinois? Well, la di da. We know the answer to that is because the bottle manufacturers don't want us to have it because it helps get rid of those bottles.
Right. They really lobby against bottle deposits.
Bottle bills are states with bottle bills, meaning deposits on bottles have a lot less.
They have much higher recycling rate.
Right, higher recycling rate, and there are fewer bottles floating around.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why the bottle manufacturers don't want it, and we don't have it in Illinois, and it's frustrating. And there have been efforts to get bottle bills passed in Illinois. There have been efforts to get bottle bills passed a lot of places, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It depends on the political will, and I would say in this climate, it's probably pretty hard to get it passed anywhere in the United States right now.
You know, speaking of this climate, it is pretty frustrating and it can be kind of depressing. And that's why we have to take things upon ourselves. You know, we have to quote something that's endlessly quoted, we have to be the change. And as Obama said in his speech when he was running for office, you know, we are the change that we're waiting for. We can't just depend on our elected officials to do it for us. And that's why that's one of the reasons that I think personal changes are so important and why we have to take the initiative ourselves. And we do need bigger systemic changes. We have to get bans on plastic bags and bottle bills and all kinds of legislation. And I list a lot of the things that I think we need in the book. But we have to start with ourselves, too, and look at how we're as individuals contributing to this problem. And that's how I got started.
I'm going to get to that in a second. I just want to tell you, I just got another tweet that said, wrap your garbage in newspaper, not plastic, to take out. Do you like that idea?
Yeah. Now, if you're able to compost, so this is the second thing. So, of course, we don't put our garbage in plastic bags. But then we, for all the wet stuff, we compost it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're able to do that, that's a fabulous way to deal with the wet stuff. If you can't, you know, one way to reduce the amount of plastic bags that you're using is to keep the wet stuff separate. And, yeah, you can put it in newspaper or you can put it in, you know, any kind of packaging that you still have left over. I wouldn't buy bags and I wouldn't waste money on, you know, the compostable bags if you're just going to put them in the trash. And I explain in the book why compostable bags are not good if they're just going to the landfill.
Let's back up a little bit here. Let's get to some of the basics. I got a couple of calls. We'll get to you guys in a sec. I want to talk to Beth just a little bit here about why plastics are so. Do you use it as a singular or a plural, by the way?
I just say plastic.
Plastic, because
there are
plastics. Yes, and that's the point. There are many different kinds of plastics.
Yeah.
And to understand plastics, you really have to start at the molecular level.
Yeah.
And you do explain some of that in layman's terms in the book. Why is plastic impossible to get rid of right now as we know it?
Well, plastic, there's a couple of things. First of all, it's these huge molecules that we've developed. So plastic is made it's a polymer, and a polymer is made of monomers, which are smaller segments, all strung together into these huge, huge, huge molecules. And there are no microbes right now that we know of, although they're discovering a few here and there that can break down specific plastics. But for the most part, in general, there aren't any microbes that have evolved in order to break it down. And the reason that they haven't evolved to break it down is because we've only had plastic for the last 100 years or so. It's so new that there hasn't been time for anything to evolve. And, you know, nature is full of polymers. I mean, we're made of polymers, trees, cellulose is polymer, hair, fingernail, horn, shell. There's lots of things in nature that are polymers, but they've existed for so long, along with the microbes that break them down, that, you know, they biodegrade, but these plastics are so new that they just don't. So they're a big problem.
Because, they cannot be broken down by natural processes.
They will degrade in the sense that they will fall apart, but they just fall apart into small particles of plastic. The molecules themselves don't break down.
Right, and this is the problem we're having, obviously, with animals ingesting plastic because they mistake it for food.
Right.
And as I pointed out, I had do you pronounce Pacific gyre or gyre?
I say gyre.
Gyre, okay.
Yeah.
we may have a vote on that. Okay. But as I pointed out earlier in the program, there isn't just the Pacific Gyre. There's the North Pacific Gyre, the South Pacific Gyre, the North Atlantic Gyre, the South Atlantic Gyre, and the Indian Ocean Gyre.
Right. And they all have plastic in them.
And they're all swirling around.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. And I found out about this about a decade ago. It was right around the time that they were first discovered. And it's interesting that they had to be discovered. I interviewed a guy who had done a round-the-world yacht race.
Mm-hmm.
And there he was in the South Pacific Ocean in the middle of nowhere. And he said, suddenly I came across this stream of garbage and plastic and junk.
Was it Charlie Moore?
No, it wasn't Charlie Moore.
Oh.
It was somebody local here who had participated in a yacht race around the world.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I came across this stream of garbage. And I started to follow it. And I followed it for days. And nobody else was around. There was no land in sight. It was in the middle of nowhere. And it never ended. He never found the end of it. That was a revelation to me.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, as I found out later, there's the Pacific Gyre and then the other gyres.
Right.
But getting back to plastic, so we have polymers in nature. Plastic is a polymer that's not in nature.
Right.
And so there's no way to break it down. So as you point out in the book, when you recycle, you're not really recycling plastic, you're downcycling. Could you explain that, please?
Yeah, well, I mean a couple things by that. First of all, plastics in general don't get recycled into the same item that they were originally. So, for example, a plastic bottle doesn't generally get recycled into another plastic bottle. it gets recycled into a secondary product, usually a textile like carpet or polar fleece or polyester, some kind of fabric. And those materials generally don't get further recycled. They get thrown away when they wear out. There is some recycling, but for the most part, they don't. So that's one way that I mean when I say downcycling, because you're not closing the loop. You're just slowing down the process from cradle to grave. And in another sense, it's downcycling because every time you recycle plastic, it gets weakened. It can't be recycled indefinitely. And so at the end, when it can't be recycled anymore, you're still going to have these plastic molecules in the environment. You know, paper gets weaker every time it's recycled too, but at the end of its life, it's going to biodegrade and plastic won't. So that's what I mean by downcycling.
Mm-hmm. And the misconception, and this is why I subtitled the book, Everything You Know About Plastics Is Wrong, is that you can, if as long as you toss it into the recycling bin,
right,
you've taken care of, you've done your duty.
Right. You know, you don't know what happens to it after you toss it in the recycle bin, because recycling is a business. And if there's no market for a particular type of plastic, it's not going to get recycled. It's going to end up in the landfill. And so there are certain plastics that are more valuable for recycling, number ones and number twos in particular, and some others to a lesser extent. But, you know, it all depends on if there's a buyer out there for it. And most of the plastic recycling in this country gets shipped to China. There is some recycling happening mostly in the southeast of this country, and there are companies that are trying to develop our recycling infrastructure here, but for the most part, it gets shipped overseas. And the conditions in which it's recycled overseas are not necessarily the best environmentally or health-wise.
No matter what the officials in China tell you.
Yeah.
Because, oh, no, we've cleaned it up. Oh, no, don't worry about it. It's much better than it was 10 years ago. Well, yeah, and then they were trying to get the smog out of Beijing when they had the Olympics there. But
right.
So we kind of have a pretty good idea what's going on in China.
Yeah.
And the other thing you point out is, and again, getting back to the molecular level, mm-hmm. It's not just we have a plastic polymer and one is a number one. Oh, and that's the other thing you point out in the book, which is just amazing, is that when you see the number on a piece of plastic with the recycling symbol around it, that doesn't necessarily mean that it can be recycled. That's just the kind of plastic that it is.
Those chasing arrows are very misleading because people associate that with recycling. And those numbers don't mean recycling. That's the resin identification code. And in fact, the FTC has regulations about how you can use that. You can't put that number next to the word recyclable or recycling or anything like that because they don't want it to be confused. And I think they should use a different type of symbol, something that doesn't look like recycling. Because, you know, whether something's recyclable or not depends on your community. It depends on what resources are available, what markets are available, what your community is equipped to collect and bail. It has nothing to do with what's on that bottle. You have to check with your community and find out. Because, you know, sometimes communities will take one and two bottles, narrow-necked bottles, but they won't take one and two containers. You know, every community has different rules.
You know, and that points out something that needs to be addressed, I think, in this country. If we're going to do anything properly, we got to stop having this piecemeal system of recycling. And I know that conservatives will scream that the government's taking over the world. But if you don't even know what you can recycle in your own community because every community is different, that's insane.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The thing that we need to keep in mind, though, is that before we think about recycling, we have to think about refusing the stuff in the first place.
Oh, and I love that's one of your R's. Reduce, reuse, recycle, and refuse.
Refuse first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we'll put it refuse, reduce,
yeah,
reuse, recycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, and I do to some degree. I'm not as good as you are by any stretch of the imagination, and I haven't studied it as much as you have. How much have you reduced your use of plastic?
Well, in 2011, my plastic waste was about 2 pounds, which is approximately 2% of what Americans throw away, plastic that Americans throw away at home. And that doesn't include what the plastic waste they generate while they're not at home. And the things that were included in that were a lot of things were cat-related, actually. There's a supplement powder that we give our cats that goes into the homemade cat food we make them. And we go through a bottle of that maybe once every 2 or 3 months. And there's packing tape in there because, you know, whenever I order something online, I always ask for no plastic packaging ahead of time, and it seems like the tape is the one area where a lot of vendors have a hard time. Prescription bottles are another one. It would be really nice if we could take the same bottle back to the pharmacy and have it refilled with the same prescription, but in California, that's against the law, so I end up with prescription bottles. And then just odds and ends, things that I accidentally acquired. Despite my best efforts.
It sounds like a lot of the laws that are out there to protect human beings end up hurting the planet.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know, but I do think that there is a big push to freak people out about germs nowadays. I mean, people
absolutely
are so germ-phobic, and plastic is the solution to that, right? Plastic keeps everything clean. It keeps everything sanitized. You know, your apples and your oranges don't have to touch each other because, you know, they might contaminate each other in the bag. Everything's sealed for your protection. I mean, it's ridiculous. And, you know, children's immune systems need to be exposed to germs in order to develop. So, but that's a whole, probably a whole other topic.
Well, but it's a related topic. And I'm with you. I go to a grocery store. A few years ago, they started on this kick of putting everything, sealing it, all of your produce. You know, yeah. It used to be you could go to the bin, you pick the produce out, you throw it in a bag, and you go home. And now it's all sealed. You can't even find romaine lettuce without it being sealed and protected from you and from everything. And
Do you have farmers markets that you can go to?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and so that's farmers markets are one of my number one solutions for people. You know, if you can't go to the grocery store and find produce that's not packaged in plastic. Shop your local farmers market because you're doing a lot more for the planet by doing that anyway. You know, you're buying local, you're supporting local farmers, you're getting generally produce that has fewer pesticides and chemicals, and you can skip the packaging altogether. And, you know, one tip that I have is when I go to the farmers market, the strawberries and blueberries and things like that generally come in a plastic basket. I just dump them into my own container or my own bag and hand the basket back to the vendor because they love to have them back to reuse.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that at the grocery store. At the grocery store, they'll just look at you and say, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, it's true. They will. They have no clue. They're not set up for that. We're talking to Beth Terry, the author of Plastic Free, How I Kick the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. I'm sure a lot of people listening, you know, some of the simple stuff is not so simple. You start with plastic bags, and I'm glad you do because
right.
there was a bill sitting on Governor Quinn's desk in Illinois here.
Right, I know.
That would institute a plastic bag recycling program. I have spoken against this bill.
Yeah.
I have been to rallies against this bill. It is just a way for the plastic bag industry to keep the status quo.
Right, because they want to ban municipalities from banning plastic bags, right? It's a ban against bans.
Right. Yeah. It's a ban against bans.
Yeah.
All right. No, you know, it's a bill that would, it says, oh, no, we're going to institute this wonderful recycling program for plastic bags. However,
it's worked so well in California. You know, we recycle a whopping like 5% of our plastic bags because we have a similar thing going on.
Right.
Here.
It didn't work there. It doesn't work anywhere.
Yeah.
And I put that on a Facebook page and somebody said, you can't say that it doesn't work anywhere. I said, yeah, I can. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. No, it doesn't. And the best thing to do is just stop using plastic bags.
Yeah.
Just get them out of your life.
So has he He's still considering it.
He's considering it. We don't, you know, you got to be a criminologist to figure out what the governor is going to do. All right. He's hinted that he might veto it. And it was voted through with a veto proof majority. Here's the problem. The good news, actually, is that if he vetoes the bill, Governor Quinn vetoes the bill, then we all get on the horn. And I'm telling and I'm speaking to my listeners here. That if he vetoes that bill, then you got to call your legislator and say, there's a reason he vetoed it. It's a very bad bill. Do not vote for it again.
Yeah.
Do not override. Yeah. Do not override the veto. All right. Listen, I need to get some people on who've been holding, and then I got to do a break and all kinds of stuff. And we have so little time, so much to talk about. Let's go to David, who's in your neck of the woods, Beth. David's in San Francisco. Good morning, David. You're on the Novak Show.
Hey, morning, Beth and Mike. You know, a couple of different things. When I heard you talking specifically about plastics, I'm wondering if you've ever heard about George Washington Carver. When he was inventing all of those thousand things from the peanut and the soybean, he specifically was coming up with biodegradable plastics, some that would break down in water, some that would break down in the sunlight. If I understand right, some of them would break down in a matter of hours, some would break down in a week's time, but they were basically cellulose fiber, and whether they were made from the husks of peanuts or soybeans or something like that. So I'm wondering if you've ever heard of some of these formulas and what that would do to the industry, because basically they would break down into biodegradable composition, which would then become fertilizer again.
Right.
And the other thing, too, Ed, since you were discussing the gyre and the plastic floating around out in the oceans, obviously the rubble coming from Japan's earthquake and tsunami is now hitting the West Coast.
Yeah.
And it would seem to me that if we are going to call ourselves a civilization, and this civilization is in a bad economic downturn, so there are a lot of ships that are not being used in this bad economic time, those ships could be used to basically become trawlers and drag up all of that, whether it's the plastics in the gyre or picking up this rubble before it gets all the way across the ocean and collecting it before it hits land. Because some of this is hazardous waste, and if it's picked up early, it's not going to dissipate. You know, the pollution industry basically takes the position is, dilution is the solution to pollution. Mm-hmm. So they say that if it just breaks up and breaks up and breaks up into tinier pieces, then it's going to be the solution.
No, that's worse.
It's actually worse.
Right, absolutely. So picking it up early, gathering it early, is the solution to pollution.
Yeah, there are quite a few schemes, actually, of organizations, companies that are forming to go out and, quote, clean up the gyre and collect the plastic and use it for various things. There are waste-to-energy schemes where they want to collect the plastic and turn it into fuel, turn it into oil. That's all very well and good, but as you said, a lot of it is breaking down into smaller and smaller pieces, and they can't just drag the ocean and collect all of that because they're going to be collecting all the marine life along with it if they were to collect it at that small a level. So, you know,
the plastic
particles are mixed up with the plankton, with the zooplankton in the ocean.
Yeah. I was going to say the other thing that you actually bring this out in the book is that also sends a bad message because it makes us believe that we can keep producing all of this stuff and then clean it up and don't worry. See, we took care of the problem, except that we didn't take care of the problem. As you said, it breaks down into such small particles. We're never going to recover those.
Right. And in terms of bioplastics, so I do have a section in the book that explains bioplastics. Originally, the first plastics that were not truly synthetic.
Hey, wait, hold on a second. David, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for a great contribution to the program.
Yeah, no trouble. Just the idea of being continual production, that's not necessarily true. If we were to gather it, there have got to be ways of washing out the plankton.
The problem is that it's actually right now a lot cheaper for companies to make products out of virgin resin than it is to make it out of recycled plastic in a lot of cases. So they don't go for it, you know.
And well, I know, but they're in oil production. In other words, most plastic is based upon oil. Mm-hmm. And the endless oil wells that are coming up, you know, we're creating plastic out of oil. And mm-hmm. when you imagine that it's 5-million-year-old dinosaurs, it's a non-renewable source. So the
right.
idea that we've got to come up with some other alternative system.
Right.
There
are companies,
storage. Yeah.
You know, Coke and Pepsi both have developed plant-based bottles that are made from plants as opposed to fossil fuels. But the problem with the plant-based bottles is that those plastics, even though the carbon in them comes from plants, they are chemically identical to PET, you know, the type of plastic that bottles are made out of. They're chemically identical to the fossil-based plastic. They don't break down. They're not biodegradable. They are recyclable just like any other bottle is recyclable. So I think that with fossil fuels running out, companies are going to move more towards plant-based, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's better just because it's based on plants. And a lot of those plants that are used are grown with chemical, you know, petrochemical fertilizers, pesticides,
well, sure, yeah.
GMOs, et cetera.
All right, David,
appreciate it.
All right, thanks for calling. 773-763-9278. Let me take care of some business here. Beth Terry, the author of Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. I'm telling you, pick up the book. Read it. It will change your life, and it will make you miserable for a while.
No. It's positive, inspiring, miserable.
I know it is. But for a few seconds, when the reality hits home that I'm doing everything wrong, yeah, for a few seconds, you're going to have that. I know you're really positive. You got to understand, I'm the dark side here, okay?
Oh.
All right, you're the and I'm the dark side, but I'm bringing this out and saying,
yeah.
Have at it. I'm on your team.
I don't want people to think that the first chapter is about the problems. The rest of the book is about solutions.
Yes,
right?
It is, including things like I didn't even know, like water stations and stop. I think about those people in line at Costco and who are in front of me with their cart and they've got this case of water bottles,
yeah.
Or two or three cases of water bottles,
yeah.
And they're like zombies.
Yeah.
Water bottle, good. Water bottle, good. And it's like
that Costco water is just tap water.
And that's the other thing, as you point out in the book, because it's bottled doesn't mean it's any healthier. In fact, often it's less healthy than your tap water because guess what, folks? You can't deliver water to people in their homes unless it's healthy, unless it's not going to kill them. So, that's all I drink. I drink tap water. I don't have a filter. I don't have any of that stuff. I'm like, I don't care. I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about poisoning them. I'm just poisoning myself, but it's not. I'm drinking tap water because the city of Chicago wouldn't send it to you if it weren't healthy for you.
Well, and the thing is, tap water is more highly regulated than bottled water. Tap water is regulated by the EPA, and it has to be tested regularly, and they have to publish their test results so people can have access to them.
Yeah.
And bottled water companies are not required to do that. Some of them have been because of pressure, but it's voluntary. They don't have to publish those results at all.
Yeah. All right. Hang on a second, Beth Terry. And yeah, I'm sorry. I'm the guy who's going to be throwing spokes in your wheel here as we do this conversation. And you just overcome it. You just say, no, Mike, you're wrong. This is all very positive, and this works. It's going to happen because I believe it. I don't know how soon we'll get rid of plastic, but you are the great first step. We will be back to Beth Terry in just a second. I can hardly believe it's July 29th. Seems like only 3.5 weeks ago that we were basking in the rays of the 103-degree sun. Good times. Wait, it was only 3.5 weeks ago. Okay. Welcome to August. And get your, later this week, and get your hands on a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. You'll read about a garden in Tinley Park that has a pond. Well, not just any pond. It was 13 years in the making and features 14 seeding areas, 26 species of trees, 24 pints of tomatoes from a surrounding veggie patch, 6 waterfalls, 4 filters, 2 islands, 3 bridges, 175 koi, and a partridge in a I mean, 20,000 gallons of water. That ain't a pond. That's a flower and garden show. And have you met Fred? That ain't a person. That's an acronym. Really, it stands for Frederick Law Olmsted in Riverside Education and Design. Yeah, there's a few more letters than the name Fred needs. But this article celebrates the 190th birthday of Olmsted, whose designs made Riverside a suburb far ahead of its time. Then there's my column on the inside back page. I'm proud to say that it is far behind its time. Did I say I'm proud of that? Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings Magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings Magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees and the Morton Arboretum. Fall can be a good time to plant many species of trees, and now is the time to plan for that. First and foremost, the tree should be cold hardy to our area. Northern Illinois is in USDA hardiness zone 5, so we need to look for trees that are hardy to zone 5 or colder. This is usually not a problem when buying locally. If you are buying from the internet or via mail order, check the cold hardiness of the tree. Consider the conditions of the planting site. What type of drainage and soil moisture are present at the site? Is compaction a problem? What is the soil pH? Usually in this area, we are dealing with alkaline soils. How much sun or shade does the location receive? Try to find a tree species that will be able to grow well within the conditions at your planting site. Also, consider the physical dimensions of the tree at maturity. Plan ahead and be sure that the planting site can handle the mature size of the tree. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm very pleased to have on the phone Beth Terry, who is the author of Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. Let's go to the phones again and talk to Mike in Waukegan. Good morning, Mike.
How are you doing there, Beth and Mike? How's it going?
Great.
Hi.
Hi. Earlier caller sort of stole my thunder regarding trolling. I was going to bring up dredging, you know, that the plastic that would provide a lot of stimulus jobs. But as far as the municipal water, I've been hearing bad things about chlorine and fluoride. So I don't know if it's the best thing to consider.
Well, okay, well that's a really great point, Beth. How do you address the issue? What is chlorine, fluoride? Yeah, a lot of folks go, yeah, that's not so good for you. Versus what's in a water bottle? How would you compare the two?
So in my book, I actually talk about how to choose a water filter for people who feel like there are things in the water that they don't want to drink. And the first step is to get your water tested and see what's in it in the first place. And then the Environmental Working Group actually has, and I can give you the reference for this, they have a guide on their website where you can go and choose a water filter based on the types of things that you want to filter out. If it's just chlorine, chlorine dissipates if you leave your bottle, if you leave your water sitting out on the counter, it dissipates pretty fast. But if it's other chemicals and fluoride, then you do need a filter for that. But in terms of the bottled water, those chemicals can also be found in bottled water as well, because they're, you know, there's no, like we were saying before, there's the testing that's required for tap water is not required for bottled water. And in fact, for a long time, they didn't even have a standard in bottled water for phthalates, which are chemicals that are used in plastics to make them softer. And probably the reason for that was because, you know, there are phthalates in those plastic bottles.
It sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it, the whole
yeah.
thing? Here. You know, what I was going to originally call up about, though, was the packaging. You know, I mean, you mentioned, you know, refilling prescription bottles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you buy something in the drugstore in these containers, and they're usually just a small fraction of the way full. It's like they're,
yeah.
And they do that, I think, to make you think you're getting more, and all we're doing is just filling up these landfills, you know, by a factor. You put the number on it. I mean, you know,
yeah.
It's can't we force these companies to, you know, use the container that is commensurate with the amount of pills or whatever it is they're
yeah.
putting out?
You know what? Companies respond when customers write to them and speak out and
but
make
they should
decisions.
Know this.
Yeah, you know, actually, you just played right into her hands, Mike. Because that's I'm going to let you go, but you're going to
sure.
hear her talk about, that's really the core message of the book.
Yeah.
And thanks for the great contribution. And go into that just a little bit, Beth, because as you say, people or businesses respond when people speak up.
They do. And I've discovered this several times, you know, just ever since I started this project in 2007. I've been doing this for 5 years now. I started out, you know, making personal changes. But as I would discover things that couldn't be found plastic-free, I would write to the company and say, I really need this product, I really like it, but I don't like your packaging. There was a smaller company called Laundry Tree, which I write about in the book, which makes a laundry product called Soap Nuts, and they were packaging them in plastic bags. And so I wrote to the company and I said, I really like your product, but have you considered not packaging it in plastic but in something more sustainable? And the woman wrote back to me and she said, you know, I really have been thinking that we need to get away from plastic, but I don't know what to switch to. Will you help me? And I don't even think I really helped her. All I did was give her encouragement. And in less than a month, she had switched to a recycled paper package instead of the plastic bags. Now, that was possible because she was a small business, and it's easier for small businesses to make changes like that. But back in 2008, when this is talking about water filters again, when I went to change my Brita water filter cartridge, I realized that was another hunk of plastic, and I didn't know what could be done with it. So I found out, I went online and I did some research, and I found out that in Germany, where the original Brita company is located, Brita had created a recycling facility for its cartridges. And in Europe, people can take their Brita filters back to the store where they bought it and put it in a bin, and it's shipped back to Brita's facility where they take it apart and recycle everything. And I thought, well, if they can do that here, there, why can't they do that here? And here in North America, the Brita company is owned by Clorox, and Clorox happens to be down the street from me in Oakland. So I thought, well, I'll just talk to Clorox because I didn't know. I thought, why not? They should listen to me. I'm their customer. So I wrote them a letter. They said, we don't recycle in the United States because recycling facilities don't exist for water filters in the United States. And I said, well, you know, in Europe, Brita created the facility for recycling them. They didn't depend on communities to do it. Anyway, to make a long story short, I found out there were a lot of other people that were interested in recycling their filters. So we started a campaign, we made a web page, we put together a petition, And I actually opened a post office box and asked people to mail me their used Brita filters because I was going to take them down the street to Clorox and say, here, you guys, do something with these. And after 8 months and 16,000 signatures and over 600 Brita filters from all over North America and Hawaii, I got a call from the brand manager of Brita saying, we wanted you to be the first to know that we have developed a way to recycle Brita filters. We have partnered with Preserve, the company that makes recycled toothbrushes, and Whole Foods also. And you can take your Brita filters back to participating Whole Foods, and they'll be sent to Preserve, and Preserve will recycle them. Or, you know, downcycle, as I explained before.
Right.
I didn't know as much about recycling back then, and I thought that recycling was the answer. But the point is just that companies do listen, and they just need to know that there is the consumer will for it, that their customers want this, because they need to be able to go to their shareholders and say it's worth it because it will increase our sales because people really want this.
So complain. Be the squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
That's sort of the gist of that. We could do this all day, and I think I'm going to invite you back at some point, Beth, because I want to go into this a little more. We didn't even get into the chemicals that companies inject into the polymers and that are released and off-gas from.
And we didn't get into very many solutions either. Don't forget, the book is all full of solutions, Mike.
Yes. be positive, Beth. I'll let you go ahead. You have the forum. So, yeah, it is. It's about solutions. How do you fix this? And we don't have to be addicted to plastic. We really, really, really don't. And it's time to change. And get the word out to the companies that make it. So Beth Terry, Plastic Free, How I Kick the Plastic Habit, and how you can too. Go to my website, and all the links are there. And I want you to buy the book today. And you're going to see a little spike, the Mike Novak bump, when people pick up that book. And then you're going to be back on the show, and we'll talk about more solutions.
Awesome. That would be great.
Beth, you have a wonderful day.
You too. This has been fun.
We'll do it again.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Feel the cool breeze, as Lucy Van Pelt used to say, standing in the outfield for Charlie Brown's baseball team. Now that we have a brief respite from the nasty hot weather, I think you need to pay a visit to Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village neighborhood. If your containers and window boxes are looking a little sad, they have exactly what you need. It's not that hard to create magic by adding some new plants to the mix. How about the ever-improving varieties of coleus? They add life and color to plantings in sun or shade. Gorgeous perennials have just arrived, including allium, butterfly weed, lamb's ear, climbing hydrangea, new colors of echinacea, and more. Plus fun new annuals like eucalyptus, dwarf ruellia in pink and purple, more zinnias, and chartreuse sweet potato vine. Need something delivered? They deliver to most neighborhoods in Chicago for a very reasonable fee. Go to ChristyWeber.com and click on Garden Center, or visit Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center on Facebook, or just stop by at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village. Look for the explosion of color.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Summer has arrived, and for many gardeners, that means heat, drought, and watering bans.
Help your landscapes thrive despite these seasonal challenges with proper care and Milorganite fertilizer. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. Mulch the soil with a layer of organic material to conserve moisture, reduce weeds, and improve the soil as it breaks down. Water plants thoroughly and less frequently whenever you irrigate the garden. This encourages deep roots, making your plants more drought tolerant and pest resistant. Water early in the day to reduce water loss to evaporation. And be sure to use Milorganite for all your summer fertilization needs. The organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn plants even during drought. Milorganite remains in the soil until the conditions are right for plant growth, including your lawn, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% non-staining iron promotes deep green growth. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. That's Milorganite.com.
We're in home stretch of the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And I want to tell you about an event that's going on tomorrow at Daly Plaza. And to do that, I'm bringing in Dr. Laura Chamberlain. Dr. Laura, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
No problem.
I'm definitely going to buy that book, Plastic Free. I am going. That is, you can count me down for one.
That's great. It's a terrific book. I mean, I was so impressed by the work she's done and the resources that are in there. It's a go-to guide, and I think people ought to get a hold of it. Now, obviously,
it's the same thing. We have to stop creating these chemicals, these destructive, poisonous chemicals, and we have to stop putting it in the ground, and that's what fracking is about, right?
Yeah.
Right. So fracking.
Well, yeah. I mean, and as I put on my website, if any of you ever, you want to know what fracking is about, see the documentary Gasland. It'll tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is a great Gasland. It is a great documentary, and they actually have a shortened version now, 45 minutes.
Oh, really?
Which is even great.
Oh, that's
even better.
So. Even better.
So the Stop the Frack Attack on Illinois rally is Monday, this coming Monday, tomorrow, July 30th, 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Thompson Center. Not the Daly Plaza, but the Thompson Center.
Did I say Daly? I'm sorry. I wrote on my website that it's Thompson Center, but you're right. I might have said Daly, and so I apologize for that. Yes, Thompson Center.
No problem. Right, exactly. So we're going to welcome up the Southern Illinoisans against fracturing our environment. These are farmers and families down in Southern Illinois, Saline County, Williamson County, the whole Southern Illinois from both west and east, but east is getting hit hard now. They are organizing, and they're coming up in times because they are the landmen that are going out all around all these counties and buying up the mineral rights. They are just canvassing this place, and they are very, very, very worried about fracking, the technology. It's called horizontal high-volume hydrofracking. And a couple things that people need to know about it is it uses extraordinary amount of water, over a million gallons for every well every time they frack, which means every time they push the water under high pressure down 5,000 feet and then horizontally, every time they do it, over a million gallons per well. So this could mean 50, 60 million gallons of fresh water every single day for fracking in Illinois. And we're in the middle of a severe drought.
Yeah, that's one issue. But I'm more concerned about what fracking does to our water supply, and the fact that in Illinois here in the General Assembly, there was a bill that would have put a moratorium on fracking until we really examined this question. And that bill never made it through in the session in the spring, but it might be brought up again during the veto session in the fall. And that's another thing you want to call to the attention of the governor, right?
Yes, we're going to be standing out front of the governor's office for two asks. And the first one is for the governor to halt immediately the permits at the Department of Natural Resources, because they're sitting on their desk, they're waiting to be signed. The landmen are out there, the trucks are in Southern Illinois, they're ready to pour the concrete, you know. So we want an immediate halt to the permits at the Department of Natural Resources, water for farming, not for fracking, and then, and we think the governor has more powers under an emergency drought situation, and then we're calling on the state legislature to pass that moratorium with an investigative task force in the fall veto. Those are our two asks, because we need to slow this down. Do you know that almost we have a glut of natural gas on the market right now because of all this fracking going on in Pennsylvania, Wyoming, Colorado? Now, you know,
yeah, but that's what people want. They want cheap prices, and, you know, to heck with the environment.
You know who's getting the cheap prices? China. We're shipping this stuff over to China. So we are destroying our environment with all of these poisons that go down with all of these millions of gallons of water and then get percolated up through our aquifers and our rivers. We're destroying it, and they're shipping our nature over to
us. Which is why we have to, if you want to make a statement, tomorrow, 11:30 to 1:30 at the James R. Thompson Center. We're flat out of time. Dr. Laura, I hope people show up and go to my website for more information. That's it for this week. Until next week, as I always say, go green or go home.